You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And all of you who are joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a really good habit to get into. All right, quick update now on Dick Criswell. I received an update today from Eric Tabor. And he says that Dick is improving. He's got a long way to go, but he is headed the right direction. He is improving, and you want to keep him in your thoughts and prayers. And certainly we wish him and his family a very Merry Christmas and all our best thoughts and wishes to Dick Criswell. Have you given much thought lately to this weather stuff that's going on? I mean, it's confusing, really, because, you know, on one side of the fence, you've got all these scientists saying that we have global warming and that we're causing it. And then on the other side of the issue, you've got a whole bunch more scientists saying there's no such thing as global warming, that the temperatures are actually declining. And then in the middle of all of this, we have these excessively hot summers and then excessively cold winters, it seems, and with a lot of precipitation. Out in Las Vegas, Nevada, in the middle of the desert, they have just experienced, a few days ago, the biggest December snowfall on record for Las Vegas, Nevada. And originally, of course, it caused flights to be canceled, but they have been resumed. Schools were still closed late last week. When it snows, they close the schools. And highways were closed. And that's out in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's like saying it happened here in Phoenix, Arizona. Unbelievable. Unreal. What's really going on? Well, maybe what Robert Felix has written in his book, Not by Fire, but by Ice, is the answer. It seems that everything is following the pattern that he said it would follow as we head toward another ice age, and that is increased precipitation. And if we continue to have increased precipitation and the weather patterns continue as they are, it's not hard to imagine that we may in fact be headed into another ice age. We have talked about that quite a bit on this show. And if we have just a little bit of time to do so tonight, I'm going to share some information with you out of Siberia. But it seems that if global warming is being caused, if it's real and if it's being caused by the CO2 emissions that us and all our machines are emitting, It would seem that in the presence of a lot of CO2, you would have global warming, right? What about Mars? Why is it so cold? It's almost all CO2. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. I am just amazed. I'm sitting here watching all kinds of indicators and lights and dials and things happen, showing us that we have been experiencing some audio difficulties, but I think we've got that fixed now, and everything looks cool. Everything looks like it's okay, and we certainly hope so. Have you ever, folks, heard of feng shui? I'm sure you have. We've had guests on this show where we've discussed feng shui previously. And one of the names in the field of and world of feng shui with which you may be familiar is Dr. Anna Maria Presio. And she is my guest this evening. She is a, and I may get the terminology wrong, and when I bring her online, she certainly is free to correct me. But my terminology, anyway, is she is a feng shui counselor or consultant, if you will, to many of the leading names in Hollywood. And she's written a book called Confessions of a Feng Shui Ghostbuster. Dr. Anna Maria Presio, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I think folks would be interested in knowing that you've been tied up out on the freeway trying to get home and just walked in the door, and here we are. So we appreciate you for, I mean, you really haven't even had time to catch your breath now that you're off of the freeway. And I appreciate you for being here. Let's begin with a quick explanation for people who may not know, a quick explanation of feng shui. What I know, it's you can't do it quickly, but as best as possible, a thumbnail sketch of what is it?
Feng shui is living in harmony with your environment. It's a literally translated terminology, feng meaning wind and shui meaning water. And so when wind and water meet, they create the most harmony, the most idealistic energy called qi. And so we have this term feng shui, which means the perfect environment, except that it's really difficult for Westerners to understand the terminology because it's an Asian term. So I wish there was another way of saying perfect harmony, but we say feng shui. Oh, is it feng shui correctly? Is it good environment? Is it environmentally sound? Is it balanced? And so sometimes it's difficult to say in perfect harmony all the time. Oh, that place is in perfect harmony. But so we say feng shui. Is it correct feng shui?
Now, you're also involved with work with animals, are you not?
I do work with animals. I have a radio show called on the Internet, on Internet Voices Radio, called Spiritual Animals. And what I try to do is educate people on the latest news on what's happening with our animals, whether they be exotic or pets or domesticated animals. And I have guests ranging from experts on a specific animal, like snakes and beavers and horse whisperers and communicators, to trainers and people who are into the holistic health of animals. And so my show is basically about the spirit of the animal itself and the way that an animal communicates with us. So that's what I do about animals.
All right, so you're into feng shui, you're into animals, and then you write a book about confessions of a feng shui ghostbuster. How does that fit in there?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. I do ghost busting and clearing of houses and clearing of environments, and sometimes people call me and they have great disturbances in their home, but they don't say, oh, I might be seeing a ghost, or, oh, I think there's a ghost around, only if they've seen it and are free to say, well, there's a ghost in my house and I need you to get this ghost out. Sometimes people have ghosts and they love having them in their environment. They love dealing with them. They're very peaceful ghosts. They're ancestors sometimes. And so the time when they do call me is when there is a serious disturbance that keeps them awake, or there's no serenity in the house and they can't produce things and create things, and so they feel unsafe. And so they call me and I go in. But through all of my years of going into homes and doing feng shui, I realized that once a home has the correct feng shui positioning and the correct environment, per se, that the ghosts will not appear in that environment, because they don't like a yang environment. They don't like a clean and clear and uncluttered environment. They actually like a disturbance of some sort themselves.
Why do you think that would be?
I think it's because that is the yin nature of ghosts and entities and spirits. Excuse me. They are yin. They are yin, meaning dark, no movement, no mobility. And yang is light and airy and sunny and delightful and happy. And so they live in a world of a yin environment, in the darkness, so to speak, for lack of a better term. They live in another dimension. They may come from another portal, and it's usually a dark space. And so they prefer a space where it's dark, and they can be in a place where they're not seen, and they can go around merrily and not have anyone disturb them. You see, it's most people think that they're disturbing us, but they like to roam around freely, and they don't want to be seen.
All right, now, how did you get involved? I mean, here you are doing feng shui. I said counseling. I don't know if that's the correct terminology. But here you are doing feng shui counseling and dealing with animals and the spiritual side of animals. And, I mean, by what means did you get involved with ghost busting?
Well, because my thesis was in environmental and spiritual reconstruction. And so I feel that when you reconstruct or deconstruct an environment, and understanding the quality and the nature of the environment, so you sometimes come across incidents where people call and say, well, you know, I can't deal with this disturbance anymore. Can you come by and get rid of this ghost? And so that's how I happened to be involved in the ghost busting, so to speak. But in ghost busting, if you don't do the feng shui correctly and you don't do both, then the ghost can reappear, it can come back, it can delay any crossover that they may need to do. And so I realized that the ghost busting goes hand in hand with feng shui, and one cannot be dealt without the other. So if I go in and there's a ghost in there, I usually tell my clients, well, I'm going to have to do the feng shui and create a new elemental balance and harmony in order for you to not have these entities return. And so By entities, I mean anything like a spirit or a soul or a supernatural force or a poltergeist, anything that is in the way of people having increased happiness and serenity and peace. And this is what I do. But primarily, the feng shui comes about to clear and clarify the environment.
All right, when someone calls and they say, look, I'm having problems here with a ghost of some type here in the house, do you do anything to verify that there's a ghost? How do you know there's a ghost there?
Well, number one, I can sense a ghost in there. Number two, there are all kinds of technical apparatuses that people use to detect them. There is a signal that comes in through my compass that makes the compass needle spin. If there's any kind of electromagnetic or any kind of disturbance within the room, that needle will spin out of control. And that's just one way. The other way are things that, you know, ghost hunters and people use to detect them, to measure them, to capture their essence and to capture their, you know, the spirit of it. And so, or they see them. People actually can see ghosts. Children can see ghosts better than adults. And sometimes I see them. Sometimes I feel them. Sometimes I know they're there just by the mere fact of me walking into the door. I can sense and feel that energy. And so it is about energy. Everything that we do is about energy. So when I feel it, when I know it's there, when people have told me they're here, we see them on a daily basis. Our neighbors see them. My roommate sees them. I see them. They won't go away. They just keep appearing. It's very disturbing. So there's been proof of ghosts for many, many centuries before we even got here. So it's not a matter of proving it. Scientists already know that they exist.
Well, generally speaking, I can buy that. But, I mean, if you're going in to clear a place of a ghost, I would think you would need to know if there actually is one there.
Yes. I would need to know if there was actually one there. And you're right, and there is a way of knowing if there is one there.
Do you work with any ghost hunter groups?
I do communicate with them often, as much as I can, and I understand their mission, and I understand what they're trying to do, and I think it's great because there's so many people now involved in discovering these presences, and I get emails all the time from these groups. But they get calls constantly. You know, people call in all the time, and they report ghosts all the time. They call them in. They want people out there. And so, yeah, there are ghosts all over. It's energy. It's just energy that's dispersed. And sometimes it disturbs us personally. Like I said, sometimes they doesn't. It doesn't. Sometimes they're there, and people don't mind it. I've heard people say, you know, it's my grandmother. I know it's my grandmother, and she's been here for a while, and I don't mind her being here. She protects me. She watches over me. And, you know, all these TV series and movies and films that show how terrible they are and how dangerous they are, well, they're not all that way. And some of them are here to guard us, guide us, and direct us, and some of them there are some that are not likable, that are nasty, and so, you know, it depends. It depends on
your... Well, what about a situation where perhaps the ghost itself is benign, but the person that owns the house or the apartment or whatever it is, they're just afraid of ghosts. It doesn't matter whether this ghost is benign or not. They're afraid, and they want this ghost gone, and it's a ghost that's there benign and maybe even benevolent, trying to help. Then what?
Well, you know, then we need to let them go and let them move on to some other ghostly realm or some other place, and I do that for them, too. If they're just totally uncomfortable with the ghostly atmosphere and they don't like that circumstance, then I change it. I go in there and I change it. And there are some things in the house, like I said, that attracts them. Clutter is one of the number one things that attracts them in. And there are certain positions of doors. If a door is in the north, is in the northeast, and there's another door directly opposite in the southwest, that creates a ghost passage, and so a portal, so to speak. And so that house is more likely to have them and to experience them. It depends. It would take an expert to go in there and take a look at the place to see if there is any signs or if there are any entities within the house, within the environment. You know, sometimes ghosts appear for unresolved things that occurred within the house. And if there's a violent death or there's a murder that took place even in battlefields, there are lots and lots of ghosts that are still there. And ghosts appear in all kinds of areas. They nest. They like to be with each other. That's why there's a lot of them in cemeteries. And it's energy that is constantly around us. And we may not see them, but they could be sitting right next to you. And there's no harm in that because it's energy that we can't see. And there are lots and lots and lots of energies that we don't see. And it's a good thing because if we were to see all the energies around us, it would disrupt us so much we wouldn't be able to function on a day-to-day basis. So some of these energies that we don't see, it's good that we don't see them. We wouldn't be able to function. But there are ghosts all over. I mean, there's ghosts in schools and old buildings and hotels and churches and old theaters and prisons and churches and hospitals and cemeteries, you know.
You said you have seen ghosts yourself sometimes.
Yes, I have.
What do you see?
I actually saw my grandfather when I was about 6 years old, and he was sitting in a chair in one of the rooms of a house where I was born, in a little village in Italy where I was born. And I didn't know my grandfather. My grandfather had died years before I even got to know him. And I saw him, and it kind of frightened me a little bit.
Did you know who it was?
I had no idea. I didn't say anything for a long time because I thought people would consider me crazy. And so I didn't say anything. And years later, I told my father, and he said, "That was my father, who you saw." I described him,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "That was your grandfather who was there." And my grandfather had died in that room.
Wow. Now, are you psychic?
I am. I don't say that I am.
Oops, you just did.
But I am. It's not something I put on my resume. I'm highly intuitive, an empath. I can sense a lot of emotions, and I can sense people, and I can sense what they're feeling, actually.
All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this, so don't go away, folks. We're going to get into ghosts and animals when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Anna Maria Precio, and we're talking about her work with feng shui and ghosts and animals. It's an interesting combination, I have to tell you. It's an unusual combination in terms of what people normally talk about when they come on and talk about feng shui, or they come on and they talk about ghosts. I don't think we've ever had anybody put all of them together like you do. Let's talk about animals for just a minute. Now, animals, many people in this audience have pets. They have cats or dogs. I've got one person that sends me email frequently who has pet ferrets, and they're very attached to their pets, very attached to their animals. And I have to say, when I lived in Serbia, I had a little dog, and she was just absolutely the best thing. And, you know, she was great. She was part of the family. And, you know, I really hated to leave her there, but I had no choice. I had to leave her there. But I get email from people, especially whenever, if I have a psychic on that talks about spirits and talking with people on the other side and so forth, I get email, and we get calls from people who want to know if there are going to be animals, if my pets are going to be on the other side, the ones that have already died. Are they going to be on the other side waiting for me? What do you say about that?
Well, I think they are on the other side, just like we go on the other side. I don't know exactly where each one of them go, but they do. They are energy too. And I've had experiences where I've communicated with animals, and I've had experiences where I know that animals come in for reasons. They communicate with us. Some of them are psychic and telepathic, particularly animals like horses. And I just interviewed a horse whisperer on my show, and she understands the mind-to-mind and the soul-to-soul connection that animals have with humans. And that's the only way they can communicate with us. They can communicate with us physically to a certain degree, but in terms of the mind and soul connection, we know they do, because you had a special like for your pet. And even though you left your pet had, you know, anxiety about you leaving them just as much as we have anxiety about people leaving us. And so there's separation anxiety with them, there's behavior problems with them, just like humans. They have the same needs and wants. It's just that their intellect is on another level, on another plane, and we have a very difficult time understanding them as much as, but, you know, they're unconditional lovers, I say, and they have a spirituality to them, and they help us through so many things. Animals have saved lives. How do they know to go under the rubble in 9/11 and find human beings?
Well, apparently we have just lost connection. And we will try to get her back. Let's see if we can do that. This is really bizarre, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, this is the second time this week, and it's not even the same telephone system. And this time we weren't talking about anything, what shall we say, anything UFO-ish. There is a helicopter going above me right now. Is there a correlation between them? I don't know. But we're going to try and get Anna Maria back on. I would like to be left alone in that regard, but apparently it's not to be. Anna Maria, are you back with us?
I'm back with you.
Okay.
I don't know what happened there.
Oh, I don't know. I get to be the focus and attention of some interesting people sometimes.
Uh-oh.
So, anyway, There's a helicopter circling above me right now. So who knows? Anyway, look, folks who are just now beginning to listen to the show will say, oh, he's just paranoid. Okay, you hang in here with me for another year or two and see. And you'll discover. Okay, let's talk about this now. We were talking about the pets and the animals that people have. There was a point at which when I was in Serbia, at which I got really sick, and I could just barely move. And I mean, I just couldn't get up and move. And this little dog knew that I was sick. And she came and laid down beside me. And she would lick my hand and then just lay her head over on my hand. And, it was quite obvious from her demeanor that she was aware of the fact there was something wrong with me. Animals seem to be able to perceive things like that. And how do they do that? What are they connecting with there?
Well, animals have the ability to not just see some things that we can't see. For instance, color. There are certain spectrums that they can see that we can't. Sounds. Certain dogs hear and they listen to certain sounds that we can't listen and hear. And so they have another... They're gifted with another communication method. And so it's psychic, it's sound, it's an ability to telepathically communicate with us. And sometimes we can understand that to a degree, and sometimes we can't. Now, they do use animals in hospices now. They've discovered that cats in particular know when someone is about to die. And they go on the bed of the person who's about to die, and they sit with them, and they comfort them until, and they help them cross over until they pass. Now, why is that? You know, why do they know that? And bring comfort to those people who are dying.
Do you think, in ancient civilizations, some of them, there are drawings of animals that are quite obviously from the drawings, domesticated. Do you think maybe some of the ancient civilizations were aware of this quality of the animals?
I do. I really do. I think that they knew about this type of telepathic communication, and I think they were highly revered in those days. And today, we revere our animals in a different way. You know, it's a multi-billion-dollar kind of business in the society. It gives us a lot of pleasure to be with our pets. It's unconditional love. They don't disturb us. All they want to do is please us and love us, and that's pretty nice.
Yeah,
it's pretty nice if you stop and think about it.
Yeah, and it's sort of a quality that we don't find, I think, probably anywhere else. All right, now, you mentioned that sometimes animals can see things we can't see, and we've got lots of stories of especially dogs reacting to something that, no one else can see. And you can look at their face, and you can see that their eyes are really intently focused. Sometimes they even look afraid. And the dog will begin barking, and when you look in that direction, you see nothing. What's up with that?
Well, they do see ghosts. They do see entities. They see energies. They see high energy. They hear noises and sounds and tunes that we can't hear. And they go to that. They're just as though they were protecting us from an intruder. It's the same way they react to a ghost or something else that they hear, and they are trying to keep us safe. So when you see a dog chasing its tail, that dog may be impeded by some entity that wants to play with them, or arouse them in some way. And so we ignore those things because we say, oh, he's just chasing his tail, maybe a fly bit him, I don't know. But they do see things, and so do cats. Cats are attracted to yin energy, so cats see ghosts very readily. And
how do they react? How do they respond to them?
Cats are not as disturbed by it. They're not as, because dogs tend to be very yang animals. They're very action-oriented. They move. They jump. They're very mobile. They're very moving. It's a yang thing. It's a dog yang thing. But cats are more of a yin. They rest in places that are stagnant. They like that negative energy. They like to go in a dark room. They enjoy the negativity, you know, because that's just their nature. They're yin in nature. So that's why they are more attracted. In fact, after my mother died, there was a white cat outside the window, and I was washing dishes by the window, and this cat didn't move. It was very, very still. It was a white cat with black eyebrows, and that's what my mother looked like. And I swore this cat was my mother. And so I was staring at the cat. I was trying to talk to the cat. I opened the window. I took its picture with flashes. It didn't move, not one inch. And my brother, I called my brother into the room, and he goes, oh, my God, that looks like Mom. And my sister came in through the other room. She looks at, she goes, oh, my God, that looks like Mom. And so the three of us were on our way to my mother's funeral. And when we came back, the cat was gone. And we asked all the neighbors, where's the cat? What happened to the cat? Did my mother have a cat? No, we never saw a white cat with dark eyebrows. There's no white cat around. In fact, there's no cat around in this area. So, you know, that's something that I understand, but it's hard for people to understand that that's really something that happened that was of another nature.
Are you still with me, or did we get hung up again?
That for that moment in time.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, what can I tell you? Maybe it's the weather out there. I don't know. I don't think so. But what we're going to do is we have a break coming up, and during that break, we're going to go to a different phone system, and we're going to see if we can't get our guest back with us. It's really disturbing. I know it is to you, too, and it's got to be disturbing for the guest. But I don't know what to tell you about it. I don't know the answer to it, other than we will try again. A lot of you have pets. A lot of you have noticed that there is something more to Rover than, you know, just Rover. You've noticed that your dog or your cat seems to have a higher intellect than what you normally think an animal has. And there's a connection between you. We're going to get into that a little deeper if we can get our guest back on the phone and get whoever's playing with us to stop. We'll be back right after this. Well, we're back. You know, I was just telling Anna Maria on the telephone that I'm surprised that this, you know, here we're talking about dogs and cats and feng shui and, you know, and this seems to be disturbing someone. I want to say what I said the other night. Whoever's doing that, and I've got pretty good suspicion, you know, you're displaying for the whole world. The whole world is watching and listening, and you're displaying for them what your real feelings are about the Constitution of the United States of America and freedom of speech. And keep doing it. Keep doing it. because as you do, it shows more light on you. You will eventually be identified. I think I know who you are. And once we identify you, we'll go to work putting you out of business, and it can be done. You think it can't? Ask NASA. They're worried now. And I'm for NASA, but I mean, hey, you think that NASA could never go under? It's under question now. All right, we're back, and Anna Maria Presio is with us. You know, we were trying to talk about dogs and cats, and the fact that they do see these spirits, they do see ghosts. Now, my question is, why would they react negatively towards a spirit if the spirit is there in a benevolent fashion?
Well, they wouldn't if the spirit was there in a benevolent fashion. Dogs are yang, and they're very loyal, and they want to shield us, and they want to secure their owners and keep them keep their guards on for their owners. So anything in the nature of that would be something they would want to protect. So if they look like they're a little put off, then they would be. It's their nature to be loyal and protective, and that's different than cats. Way dogs are much more of a yang nature. So some dogs can hear the entities and some can see ghosts, but they're not driven like the cat to be with them or to go in search of them. Dogs just want to get rid of them. You know, they just want to get rid of the intruder. They want it to be peaceful and they want it to be serene for the owner. Cats, on the other hand, they engage more. They want to stay in the negative energy, and they're attracted to it. And negative energy sometimes are ghosts. And they often know in advance if someone's about to pass on, and they appear to be comforting them or to help. It seems as though they're helping them to move on. Now, I got to tell you a story about a friend of mine who her cat was scratching her left breast all the time. And it was disturbing her, and she said to me, you know, what? I don't understand this. This cat of mine is doing this continuously. She said it had never happened to her before, and she was getting annoyed at her cat. So I told her to go see her doctor and to have her doctor order a mammogram. And the test results were positive. They found breast cancer in her left breast. It was in the early stages, and that was the good news about it, because they removed the cancer, and she's cancer-free now. But
the cat knew.
The cat knew. The cat could sense the negativity, you see, the yin areas, the yin spots that were dangerous. Now, not all cats are able to detect, or they shouldn't be used as detective devices, but some of them can notice certain irregularities. And then sometimes we really need to pay attention to the cat's behavior and to see where that cat is hanging out, where it's going. Is it tapping us in a certain way? You know, do they have that knowledge of us and our bodies, and can they steer us in a direction of early detection, you know, like a CAT scan? But, you know, I don't mean to make light of it. I think it's a very good thing that they have this extra sense or this perception that maybe some other people want to interfere with right now. But they do. They have that. If we get some kind of a scientific knowledge of that, maybe there's other ways that we can detect diseases that we don't know about today.
All right. Do our animals view us as friends?
Yes, they do. Yeah, they do. For the most part, they do. And they're just like us. If we're threatened in any way, if somebody attacks us, if somebody is teasing us, then we're going to get on the defensive, and that's what they do too. Except that exotic animals, we should be careful about exotic animals, because exotic animals, leopards and tigers, they have a whole different nature to them because they're wild, and they are not, in a sense, able. They are able to be tamed in a certain way, but not in a sense that we think they are. So we have to be very, very careful about how we handle those animals.
All right, now, we've got about 3 minutes here until break. And I want to explore this idea of our animals viewing us as friends and sort of marrying that with feng shui and ghost busting. When you go into a home and you do what you do with feng shui to get rid of ghosts or spirits, and if those people have animals, do you notice a marked change in the behavior of those animals?
When you mean before I feng shui it or after?
Well, if you compare before and after, is there a difference in the animal's behavior?
Yes, there's a big difference, actually, because I can follow a cat around and know exactly where the bad numbers are, so to speak, because I do charting and I do mathematical equations to figure out which areas are more yin than yang, and that's how I balance the entire area, is to go in with a compass and figure out the direction of the house, how it's sitting, what kinds of characteristics each room has, which room is better for creativity, which room is better for a bedroom, a study, a den, an art room. So this is what I do, and I can tell you that after I do the feng shui, the animals are just as happier as their owners when it's a clear environment.
Do the owners ever report to you that Fido has settled down, or that Fifi has settled down and is calmer and seems to be happier? Or is it just sort of an observation that you make, that you see?
No, they really are. They really are happier when they don't have the disruption and they don't have the electromagnetic force hitting them. And by the way, it's not just about feng shui energies of incorrect placement of things. It's also the energetics of electricity, power lines, any kind of disruption of a lot of electrical forces coming at them. It's the energetics of too much water in one area versus another area. It's balancing all of the elements so that everybody is more peaceful, everybody is more contented, and once they are, they can create, produce, do more of what they want to do in their life. And so it balances everybody within the space, not just the people who call me, the humans who call me, but their partners, their children, and their pets. And so if everyone understood how that works with energetics, then their animals would have less behavior problems. Their animals would be happier. They would sleep better, just like the owners, you know. If we're disrupted by sleep in any way, we can't function the next day.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, I get 4 hours sleep a night. Now, for those 4 hours, I'm absolutely dead to the world. You can have a gunfight outside my window, and I won't wake up, and I'm not exaggerating. That has happened. I don't,
wow.
You know, I go to bed for the purpose of going to sleep, and that's what I do, and I'm serious about it. But if you do happen to wake me up during that 4 hours, I can't go back to sleep, and the next 24 hours are miserable for everyone around me. So, sleep is an essential part of our lives, and it has to be done right. If it's not done right, it affects the way we think and the way we act. We have to take a break, and when we come back, I'll open the telephone lines for you. Maybe your pets have been doing something strange, and you think maybe there might be a ghost. Here's the person to talk to. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are going to do our best here to open up the telephone lines. It's been a long time since we've had just lots and problems, one after the other like that. But we're having them tonight, and we're going to get through them. My guest is Anna Maria Prezio. Dr. Prezio is an expert in feng shui and also in feng shui as applied to ghosts. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? All right, Kevin, what are you doing in Iroquois Falls, Ontario? I thought you were somewhere else.
Oh, I'm back home for the holidays, actually. That's why I haven't been able to call into the show for the last little while, because we didn't have internet at home. I had to get it put back in.
I see.
But I'm back, and hello, Anna Marie. It's a great show tonight.
Thank you.
I don't know. Can you... Yeah. You know, I'm going to take a sledgehammer to the technology around here over the Christmas holiday. All right, Anna Maria, can you hear Kevin?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Kevin.
Well, Anna Marie, you were talking about pets and animals. Actually, my cat that I got at home has been acting very strange recently. You talk about cats and ghosts, and now we know that there's a ghost in that house. I don't know if that's affecting anything. It's affecting the animal or not, because he's an outdoor cat. And he came into the house when I first came home, and now he doesn't want to go back out. It doesn't matter what's going on outside, he just does not want to leave the house, and he's an outdoor cat. Maybe you can tell me what's going on.
Well, how old is the cat?
What?
The cat is older?
No, he's about 2 years old.
About 2 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. So the cat has an attachment to the internal house. And this ghost, you say there's a ghost there. So the cat has an attachment to the ghost, and the ghost may be keeping it at bay. And the ghost may be a familiarity to the cat. The cat may know the ghost.
Yeah, because no matter what the temperature is outside, he goes out and spends a couple hours.
Spends a couple of hours outside?
Yep, no matter what the temperature is. No matter the weather.
Wow.
Now the cat is behaving differently?
Yep.
And the cat does not want to go outside?
That's right.
Wow. Okay. So the cat has some kind of an emotional attachment inside, and that emotional attachment is either something that's changed inside or the ghost attachment inside. Sometimes play with them. If they have playtime with something that's keeping them occupied within the house, they won't want to go out. Because when they go out, they get...
I used to have two cats there. My dad took the other one. But she would go upstairs where we think that the entity is. And she'd go upstairs, and I'd be, like, sitting on the computer or listening to the Kevin Smith Show, and next thing you know, the cat would come tearing down the stairs, running into the basement, and I'd go running up the stairs when I was scared, and it'd feel a little bit chilly up there, because we think it's my uncle that's up there, but we're not sure.
Well, when the temperature drops like that, that is cause for, there may be a ghost in that area where there's a lot of cold and chill. Because they draw energy, they draw heat energy within. So that there could be a ghost right there where there's that coldness. That's where it may be. So would you like the cat to go outside?
Well, yeah, because I don't have to go back. I don't want to have to clean the litter box all the time. So.
Okay.
Does the cat have
a bell around its neck? Because what happens with sound is that sound can disintegrate certain energies. And if you put a bell or some kind of a sound device around the cat's neck, it may allow itself to be away from the... It may push itself from the ghost. Because what a bell does and what that sound does is it disperses chi energy. And so it has a tendency not to be attached to that ghost that way. So if you put a little bell, a little dingly thing around the neck, It doesn't have to be anything really loud. Just try it and see if that works for you.
Well, I don't know if I'll be able to get anything around his neck. I think that may be a losing proposition unless I get him declawed or something. But I would probably end up shredding my arm doing that. Anyway, thanks for answering my questions, and Merry Christmas to you guys.
All right, thank you.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, Kevin. All right, pardon me, folks. The telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. And if you have a question, maybe your animals have been acting strange, and maybe you suspect there's some type of an energy disturbance, maybe a ghost, maybe something else. This is the person to talk to. 602-539-9580. Anna Maria, the in interviewing people about the whole thing with UFOs, one of the things that people have written about, and I've run into this more than once, it's not just the dogs and cats, but cattle in the field. One very interesting incident that I read about happened in Denmark. I believe that's where it happened. I could be wrong about that, but I think it was in Denmark, where there had been UFO sightings for several nights in a row. And a farmer was out, and the cattle were making their normal noises at that time of the day. They were all, I guess you say, mooing. And then the neighbors' cattle were doing the same thing. And then suddenly everything went silent.
Wow.
And then there was the UFO sighting right above the field.
Wow.
What do you suspect would be the deal with that? Are they sensing the energy of the UFO? Are they sensing the energy of the entities in the UFO? Or is it just coincidence? I mean, what's up with that?
I don't think it's coincidence at all, because they sense any kind of a field, any kind of electromagnetic field. They sense it, and they feel it, too. And it may have just been so powerful as to shut them up, really. They do sense it and they feel it. There's no question in my mind that that's what happened. And they're not apparitions that they see either. And they can also see things that we can't see. So if there were any devices where the UFOs were to render themselves invisible, some animals see that, you know, we can't, but they can. Animals have an amazing acuity, an amazing sense, amazing intuition, amazing psychology, psychic abilities, extraordinary abilities, telepathic abilities, and we totally underestimate them. And if we could harness and harvest these abilities, we may have another scientific, how should I say, discovery or knowledge.
You know, there's an interesting thing that when I first start to tell you about this, you may think, well, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but hang on. Dr. Gerald Epling, over in the Dallas, Texas area, just outside of Dallas, has done some and is doing some amazing research with plants. And he's been able to actually quantify, I mean, to chart on graphs, you know, that plants react to our thoughts. Now, we've all heard about, you know, if you play music around your plants, they do better, and some kinds of music is better than others for that. And if you talk to your plants, they do better, and some people chuckle at that, and yet that's been scientifically proven. Well, he went a step further, and he's been able to determine and to actually chart it with very sensitive equipment that plants react to our thoughts. Now, if a plant can react to our thoughts, for instance, if you think, okay, I'm going to burn you up, and this plant has a reaction right at the moment you think that, and it's measured by very sensitive scientific equipment, and yes, there's a reaction. If a plant can react to our thoughts, I don't think it's woo-woo to think that another animal could react to our thoughts. And, you know, our minds are really full of all kinds of stuff, and our minds are so busy. But, you know, it may be that a dog's mind is just not full of all that stuff and not that busy and is more receptive to our thoughts than we imagine.
That's very true, and I'm glad you brought up plants, because there's a book, it's called The Secret Life of Plants,
mm-hmm.
and it's an account of the testing that has been done, just as you mentioned, of the physical, emotional, and spiritual relationship between plants and humans, and man and humans. And so it's been time-tested that there are results from that. And imagine, if we could do that with plants, what could we do with animals? What could we do with, you know, the intelligence of an animal? And so I 100% believe that there is undiscovered territories in that realm. And I think we're going to see some really profound and astonishing revelations from it. And, you know, this book will tell you a lot about that. It'll give you information about all kinds of things, like you know, the fertilizer industry, the what happens to plants when you treat them a certain way, and you know what it's they're cells. Plants are cells. They are energy. Just because their cells are different from our cells doesn't make them less energy.
Well, let me throw a concept at you that I threw at Dr. Epling.
Uh-huh.
Now, let me add this to the mix so that this will make sense. His day job, if you will, his main focus, is he is an expert in memory, and he's a researcher into memory and how memories are formed. And where are they stored, and how are they recalled, and so forth. Now, one of the statements he made was that we know just about everything there is to know about memory, except where it is stored. And I suggested that perhaps memory is stored in a field around us. He said it's not stored in the brain. So maybe it's stored in a field around us. Cogitate on that a little bit. Let's take this call, and we'll get back to that in just a moment. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
How are y'all doing this evening?
Doing well, sir. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I was wondering, your guest said she's a psychic. I was wondering if she could give me a reading over the phone.
Well, I don't know if she is a psychic medium that does readings, but we'll ask. Dr. Prezio, do you do that?
It depends on who it is. I do that sometimes. I've been able to predict people before they died, being able to predict deaths.
Well,
I'll hear that.
Up to you if you want to do a reading for Terry over the telephone, or if you prefer not to, it's up to you.
Okay. Is it? You know what? I can answer a quick question for you, Terry.
Okay.
What's your question?
Oh, I thought she, but she had some information for me.
Well, ask a question, and she can answer a question for you.
Okay. I just will my health improve?
Will your health improve?
Mm-hmm.
I say yes, but you have to work on it. And the reason why I say yes is because it is possible. You sound a little bit upset, anxious, and just wanting something to be different than the way it is. Is that true?
Yeah, I've been been having problems.
Have
with,
you been Have you been sick for a long time
depression.
With a chronic illness?
Yeah, it verified with three psychiatrists that I have a high rate of anxiety and depression and stuff. So,
do you
I just wonder
do take where any natural medicines? Like, do you take any vitamin B12, or do you take anything that is of a nature of an immune booster, or anything like that?
Just pretty much what the doctor prescribes. I was just wondering if it has anything to do with maybe heavy metals that are, poison my system.
There are things that you can take to dissipate that heavy metalness. There are lots of chemical extractors, for lack of a better word, that take away mercury, any kind of mercury poisoning that you might have had, or any lead poisoning that you might have had. There are certain things that you can take that don't even require a prescription, that are over-the-counter. For instance, Wyara makes a natural cellular defense product that takes away all of these metals, and it's just a liquid drop or two in a glass of water. So I would explore those. I would go to a holistic, natural nutritionist who can steer you in that direction and maybe detoxify your body a bit more. And there are ways to detoxify your body so that you can replenish it with lots of nutrition, healthy vitamins, and get your stamina back, because it sounds like you're fatigued as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
So it will give you more energy.
I did go to a holistic
plant life. It will give you a lot more energy to drink a lot of juices, a lot of plants, eat a lot of vegetables, and stay away from additives, toxic chemicals, and things of that nature. And I would definitely go on that route, and you will see an incredible improvement in your system.
Yeah. I did see a holistic healer, but she said that besides acupuncture, and they got a machine that you put your feet in, and it pulls heavy metals out. She said she couldn't prescribe anything due to the medicine, that I was already on through the doctor. She didn't want to be responsible with doing that. Would conflict with it or maximize it.
Can even natural substances can have reactions with the pharmaceuticals, and they do have to be careful. Terry, thanks for the call, man.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
All right. Okay, we've got about 3 minutes here till break, and I want us to sort of get back to this consciousness being around us, or a field of consciousness around us.
Okay.
This is just a thought of mine. I can't even say it's actually a theory, but it's a thought close to being a theory, that consciousness is, it just is. And we cause disturbances, individual disturbances in consciousness. Each of us being individual, each of us thinking, causes local disturbances in the consciousness that is us. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And then what we think and the emotions that we have feed back into the consciousness and add to it. Some people call it the Akashic Records. But, you know, the consciousness just is. And I think if a plant, I mean, for goodness sakes, if a plant can detect our thoughts and react to our thoughts, then there's something seriously wrong with what we're doing with our minds if we can't detect and sense and react to the consciousness around us.
That's true. That's very true. That's very well put, actually, because there is a collective consciousness, and there's also those fields around us, those energy fields around us that either attracts or repels. And I don't know if you've ever read any of Thomas Edison's work, but a lot of people thought he was crazy, but he was trying, he believed that our soul was made up of what he referred to as life units, and they're microscopic particles, and they can arrange and rearrange in any form. And his work, he died before completing this, but I would love for some scientists to come up with a similar kind of documentation that he did, because he was trying to get to that. He was trying to get to what you're talking about. And I don't think it's crazy. I think it's real. I think it's something that we need to explore. And look at the laws of attraction that everybody is talking about today. The laws of attraction, the law of this and the law of that, and the law of, you know, giving and receiving. And it's all consciousness law. And so I think that you've got something there. I believe it. I really do. I think that it can be distorted, it could be attracted, it could be in greater proportions and lesser proportion. I think that we can do a lot more with our mind and brains than we think we can.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we'll open up the phone lines for you, your calls. Maybe you've got some questions or some comments for Dr. Anna Maria Precio. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Dr. Anna Maria Precio, and we're talking about some things that some people may think, well, you know, that's really out there. It's really not, folks. It's really all right here around us. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I think your guest is really insightful, intelligent, and just all around smart and a good-natured person. And I want to thank her for coming on the show. It was one of the more interesting shows I've ever seen.
Well, thanks for the, as they used to say back in the old CB days, thanks for the flowers. Anna Maria, how about that? The caller says this is one of the best shows we've done.
Wow, thank you, thank you. You are insightful.
I do have a perfect question for her, though, something that I have to live with daily that pertains to death and animals, and it's very hard. She might be able to help me with it.
All right.
Well, I had this bird, and I've worked a lot with animals. I've had to put a lot of baby ones to sleep with broken legs and things that have gone wrong. I've worked a lot with baby animals. And I, out of anybody, almost see them as being human. And I can't differentiate the energy sometimes. Whenever I'm going out, I'm always looking to the skies for birds and trying to feed anything I can and things like that. But my one special baby, who was about 6 years old, died 3 to 4 months ago. And we were so close that when I would go out for a bike ride or something, she'd literally be in my shirt next to traffic and would know not to go anywhere. I could do anything. This bird would attack my mouse because she'd get jealous because she loved me so much and she didn't want me touching things. She was the most sweetest bird in the world, and she meant everything to me. Like, not everything, but sometimes it feels like that. I don't seem to be able to get over it at all, and nor do I want to, but there's something where every once in a while, I've asked somebody about this, and they said that it was unhealthy to do it, but every once in a while, I will picture my bird right next to me and talk to it, and, you know, even fake, like I'm giving it a kiss or something like that, and try to picture it around me, and I feel like it's around me, and I pray to God, if my little baby up there wants to be with me when I die, let her be able to stay and wait, and if she wants to go on, let her take off, and let her know that I love her, and let her know that whatever she wants to do is great, and I don't know if she's on the other side with the same kind of connection, not wanting to do things or what, but I wanted to know if it's unhealthy to picture your dead thing there. And sometimes I think it might be on my shoulder. It almost feels like it is, and I don't know because I'm on an actual medium like the doctor. Is it unhealthy to talk and act as if it's there just in case it is there and to be praying like all the way to the extent that if it wants to, it can wait for you to die and so you can be reunited and you can be its dad again? Thank you.
Wow, what a profound person. First of all, I just want to say that because of your sensitivity, it keeps you in touch. It keeps you in touch with your intuition. It keeps you in touch with other people's sensitivities. You're a highly sensitive person, and it brings you comfort. And it's great that you can call in and discuss this without any repercussion. So I'm very, very glad that you called in. That's number one. And number two, no, there's nothing wrong with, you know, imagining and feeling that there is an actual spirit of your dead animal, whether it's a bird or cat or dog or whatever. They remain in our memories. They remain in touch with us. And there's just absolutely nothing wrong with it. If it brings you comfort and if it brings you joy, then those are the memories we keep. We don't want to keep negative memories. We want to keep loving, joyful memories so that we can be happy in our lives. And when does this cross the line? You know when it does, and you know when it doesn't. So I will leave it up to you because you're a very, very highly sensitive person, and you know these things. So just keep in touch with your sensitivity. And that's what animals teach us. They teach us to be sensitive, not just to them, but to the other people around us, and remind us of that. And that's one of the reasons why they're here on Earth.
You know, there are people listening who have absolutely, there's nothing in them that connects with that. And they just don't understand how anyone could be that attached to an animal. But I'll tell you something. And look, we had a conversation where I explained to you that I am the least, absolutely the least woo-woo person on this planet. There's not an ounce of woo-woo in me. But I don't think it's woo-woo to become very attached to our pets. I think people can go overboard with that. They can do. People go overboard with their kids sometimes. But, you know, when I had to leave Serbia and I looked at the eyes, into the eyes of that little dog who knew I was leaving, you could see it. I still think about that sometimes, and I feel it again every time I think about it. And, you know, I had to leave. I didn't have a choice. But, you know, I really miss that dog.
I wish that dog was here with me today, but it just wasn't to be. And I don't think there's anything woo-woo about that. These sometimes there's a very special connection between a person and a pet, and it's more than just a pet.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true. And we shouldn't negate those feelings at all. You know, that would make us less than human, and we are human, and we do want to believe that someday we'll be able to see these animals again, and just like friends that we leave for very long periods of time, friends that we make a connection with, and we're with for, you know, a day, a month, a year, 10 years, and then we don't see them again. And who's to say that we won't see them again? That there is a high possibility that we will. So, you know, keep in touch with that, because it helps us to keep in touch with other things. And so I think there's nothing woo-woo about it.
Well, no, I don't think there is. I think it's possible for a person to invent things that aren't real in their minds, invent things about their pets that aren't real, just like they invent things about people that are not real. They imagine things that are not so. And, you know, it's just, we do it with people, we do that with animals too. However, some animals and some people who have animals develop a very special friendship and a very special bond where they actually understand each other. And, you know, I had a cat. I've told about this cat before. She just wandered up onto our property, and she was already old, and she just adopted us. It's like, I'm here now. And this cat, you could talk to her in plain English, and she would understand. If she was on the sofa, you know, and she was a long-haired cat, I could come in and say, "Cat, get down." And she would get down off of the sofa. Most cats will not come to you when you call them, but she would. And we had a little toddler at the time. And when he would, you know, toddlers are not always gentle with animals. They don't know how to be, and they don't know to be. And, you know, the first time he picked her up, I thought, oh, no. You know, he's going to hurt her. She's going to scratch him. And I watched as he picked her up and sort of put her up over his shoulder and just kind of, you know, her head was dangling off over his shoulder. And I watched as she drew her claws in and closed her paws.
Whoa.
So, you know, this thing with animals, there's nothing woo-woo about it when, I mean, we see them react in ways that say they understand. Now, let's get back to this thing I was talking about with consciousness. Let's say that whatever UFOs are, and from wherever they may come, the inhabitants of those UFOs, the occupants of those UFOs, apparently are also conscious and intelligent. Although I don't think I've ever met one face-to-face, the way the craft fly and the way they react and respond says that they apparently are under intelligent control. The consciousness that they are experiencing, if what I, my thought that's nearly a theory, if it's accurate, they're experiencing the exact same consciousness that we're experiencing, perhaps at a different level, but consciousness just is. And there ought to, you would think, there ought to be some way for us to communicate with them. I mean, if cows know they're coming and dogs and cats know they're coming, why don't we?
Well, maybe we're in denial of the fact that they're already here. Maybe we don't want to believe it. It's too disruptive, and our minds can play tricks on that.
How is it disruptive?
To our mind, to think that there are strangers among us who are from another planet who might be a threat to us, and this is how we look at it, because that's how it's been. That's how it's been given to us in cinema, and so we fear it.
Well, yeah, but folks need to be able, and really, it's time, folks. Just if you fear this possibility of extraterrestrials, and you fear it based on what you've seen in the movies, it's time to grow up. Those are just movies.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm. I know. And the concept of other dimensions, of higher dimensions, of UFOs living with us is a consciousness that few of us have.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll be back right after this, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I want to tell you about tomorrow night very quickly, and then we'll get back to our guest. My guest tomorrow night is one of our listeners, Marvin Lima. And you're really going to be, we've got a treat for you. I'm going to show you something Marvin has done. Got a video clip of it. You're going to be amazed. And you want to be sure you tune in for that and tell all your friends to tune in. And if you've got some enemies that absolutely hate anything to do with the paranormal, the best way to get back at an enemy is just invite them to listen to this show, all right? So invite everybody, friends, enemies, and in between. All right, my guest is Dr. Anna Maria Presio. The telephone line is open. We will take one more call. We've got time for one, I think. And we are trying to put the telephone number up on the video screen for you. And there it is. All right. Now, 602-539-9580. This thing about extraterrestrials, and then, of course, we've got 2012 is coming up. And there's I get a lot of calls in this show from people who are very concerned about the possibility of extraterrestrials being among us, and maybe they're not good for us, maybe they're hostile. There are people who see it the other way as well. But I get a lot of those calls. And then I get a lot of calls from people who are very concerned about 2012. Now, in your work with Feng Shui, do you run into those same sorts of anxieties, and what do you do with it if you run into them?
The anxieties of extraterrestrials, you mean?
Yeah, anxieties about the possibility of extraterrestrials being among us, or anxiety over the coming possible calamities of 2012 that a lot of people think are going to happen. Do you run into that with your clients?
Not so much. Usually my clients are interested in improving what's going on in their life at the moment, mm-hmm. Whether it's financially or a relationship, or they're losing money.
Mm-hmm.
They're interested in better health. They're interested in better things in their lives. whether it be prosperity or happiness or relationships. So the concern is an immediate concern that I face all the time. It's not about is there going to be a calamity in this world. They are interested, however, in a correct date to choose when they get married, or if there's an event that's going on, they want to know if that's the correct day to do it in, and mm-hmm. and about their lives. They're very, very interested in finding out about themselves. And so when I combine the person's relationship with a home, I do have to know about the person as well as the home.
Well, let me sort of be a little more specific in my question. If, let's say that I were to call you and I were to tell you, look, you know, I'm worried about this 2012. The Mayan calendar ends on December the 21st, 2012, and all these books have been written about it, and they say there's going to be big calamities, and I'm trying to get away from that anxiety. It just seems to be pervasive in my life. I'm trying to get away from that. Is there something that you can do in feng shui that would assist that?
Is there something that I can do in feng shui that would assist their anxiety about such an event of a doomsday kind of thing?
Yeah, to help them just not have it be so pervasive in their life.
I think if somebody is fixated on one particular thing like that, it might be an issue. It might be an issue that they need to resolve other than feng shui, because feng shui doesn't take care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a part of that I call destiny that that no one can take care of, because nobody knows what that is. It's an unknown. You know, in my book, in the back of the book, there are factors that help. And you know, feng shui is but one factor in our lives that can improve our lives. But there are other influences in how our life goes. And karma, cultivation, and how we treat ourselves and other people in our life, and you know, self-improvement and diligence. And those things are things that go hand in hand with what I do. But they're also separate. They're also separate things and entities. Are they anxious about these certain things? Some people are. Some people are very anxious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the offering is that we deal with the present, with what's going on in time now, because there's very little that we can do about years from now.
Well, that's exactly what I say. All the time, and that is, hey, whatever is. And, you know, if in fact there's going to be all these calamities in 2012, and, you know, we're going to have some kind of earthbuster catastrophe, we're all going to find out about it on the same day. And I hear people say, well, you know, you need to get prepared. Well, how are you going to prepare for that? I mean, we don't even know what it is that may be going to happen, and exactly where is it going to happen. So, you know, the best thing that you can do to prepare, I think, is to be grounded and settled and peaceful and enjoy life now.
Right. That's right. It's a spiritual transformation that we do within ourselves every day. You know, our improvement every day with ourselves, with humanity, with our neighbors, with our families, with our friends, with our loved ones, that's what we need to do now, and be a spiritual person and transform ourselves every day. You know, because I can't speculate on what's going to happen to 2012. Yes, there are predictions. Even feng shui masters predict some things in the future, in the following year, in the coming year. But, you know, if we keep and manifest our happiness ourselves and don't take don't give that to others to be responsible for it, and for us to be responsible for our own happiness, then we can attain the consciousness of the present. We can attain the spirituality of the now. And I think that's what's necessary.
I think so.
You know? Even Eckhart Tolle says that. You live in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
All we got is the moment.
Listen, speaking of the moment, we're about out of moments. I want you to tell everybody where they can get your book.
Wow, okay. You can get my book at prezio.com. That's prezio.com or lulu.com. And the book title is Confessions of a Feng Shui Ghostbuster. And my name is Dr. Anna Maria Prezio. And thank you so much for having me on your show. I am blessed by that.
Well, I appreciate you for being on the show and for talking with a sort of outside the realm of maybe what you normally would talk about. Some of it you normally would talk about. Some of it probably not. But I think that what you've written and I think that what you talk about on your show has very specific application in the areas that we talk about on this show, and we've seen that to be the case here tonight. And I wish you all the best and a very Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year.
Thank you so much, Kevin, and I wish that for you too. May your new year be prosperous, joyful, and happy.
Thank you. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment, and I'd like to chat with you for just a moment after the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Anna Maria Prezio, you want to be sure and go take a look at the book. It's interesting stuff. It'll make you think about things that perhaps you haven't considered, and that's always a good thing. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.